It stopped abruptly.
Look at that.
That is, I guess that's the album version of Long Distance Runaround by Yes, from, I believe, the Yes album, or it could be.
Yes.
It could be Fragile. I believe it's Fragile, and I have all of these in my vinyl collection, John. Speaking of nostalgic music, it is 12:30 here at KPTZ in Port Townsend, and you can tell by the jolly banter going on that it is time once again for Bureaucracy Now. I'm Taylor Clark. I'm here with my co-host, Port Townsend City Manager, John Morrow. Hi, John.
Hello, Taylor.
And once again, we walked in, sat down, and started a discussion that we never have time to finish. And I believe that that's good because we can now continue to have that discussion. And I want to remind listeners that if you have questions or comments, we would love to hear from you. I think that public input is important. And for this forum, dj@kptz.org is where you send your messages, and
and here we are, beautiful sunny day,
and here we are. What's on your mind, John?
Oh man, there's so much to talk about. A couple things. One is, you signaled to me you were mid-sentence.
I was mid-sentence when Long Distance Ran Around stopped.
Yeah, so I don't want to cut that off because I think that's an interesting framing to a couple other things that I might be interested in mentioning. And you had said to me, and I'm paraphrasing, that we had a, talk about sausage and poop here, like last week, right? We were talking about how the sausage is made with a work plan.
And
we had an all-day city council department director retreat or work session,
I want to know all sorts of things about it. Yeah. So I have some specific questions.
But you don't want to stream or watch the tape of all 8 hours, or is that
no, John? I don't.
All right. Well,
no. I'm
let's summarize.
I'm a. You know, here's the thing: is that our department heads, our city manager, and I and our electeds have signed up to do that. And in the case of the electeds, not necessarily well compensated. So thank you to the electeds.
Yeah.
And there are presumably some members of the public are interested enough to attend. That's going to be one of my questions. But there's a lot of us in the public that would like the summary, exegesis.
Please keep making the sausage, make it tasty, and don't mess up.
Right. I mean, that's how we feel about it.
Yeah,
but we'd like to know sort of,
So look, I came unprepared to speak to this, so I will off the cuff try my best, and if you can course correct me. But I love these sessions.
I know.
For lots of reasons. A couple of the reasons are we don't spend a lot of time in one room all talking with various, anybody who's new to Port Townsend, go check out your city council members. They're interesting. They represent the community, obviously. But
they're passionate about their city.
They care.
Yeah.
They care, period. And they're signing up to do a thankless job to represent community interests that are often very different and make difficult decisions. Same with staff. They care. I mean, my team is exceptional. And when you get all that chemistry in the room about the people operating, like that's my job. I operate. I keep things moving. And the policymakers who think about the future, that city council, we get us together and talk about what we want to do in future years. It's really exciting because we're all in the headspace and love to think about this stuff.
And this is the event that gives you a chance to really think about where are we but where do we want to go?
Right.
And how might we get there?
And we don't often, we have a council meeting, first, second, and third Mondays of each month. And, that's a time to talk about specific decisions and there's dialogue, but you don't have the kind of workshop, all-day workshop, where we literally break bread together. There are members of the public who attended, a few members of the public, the Financial Sustainability Task Force, and talk about the thankless jobs.
The whole task force attended.
Whole task force attended. And they, there are four.
I was going to say, could you mention their names last week and you had a thanks for them? Would you?
Yeah.
Can you thank them one more time?
I can. And I don't know if I mentioned their names. I feel like I want to.
You did.
Okay, great. They're boy, they gave quite a lot over a short period of time. And that's kind of no surprise knowing who they are. You know, Catherine Robinson, former mayor, Earl Merman, multiple leadership roles, lean thinker, John Nowak, school board member, Rick Yonke, planning commission member. I mean, these guys and gals wear numbers of hats in town. But, you know, the least one thing drawing them all together is they really care enough to wade into some thick policy, put their minds across some complicated topics, and come out the other end with a pretty robust, I mean, I'll position that the city's never done this before. We've come up with kind of a game plan that looks at alternatives for a number of our priorities and costs them out over multiple years and puts options on the table. You know, it doesn't say do them all because we actually can't. We can't afford it. But it does say, hey, if you want to do this, you got to do that. And here's the knock-on effect. And it's a great big piece of strategic integrated thinking. And I couldn't thank, you know, Earl, Catherine, John, and Rick enough for their work. As well as my team, because every member of my team, director team, participated robustly in this. You can imagine you can't be a public works director, finance director, planning director, et cetera, without being fully engaged in this work. So the retreat was sort of, you know, polished by, there was a lens of financial sustainability over the whole thing.
Because their report was just presented.
It was presented a week
or a week and a half ago, I think.
And yeah, exactly. So that session was great because we want, I mean, the real thing that we're meant to decide is what are we doing in 2024? And so a lot was put on the table. Then you have to do the kind of reality check and, you know, capacity check. But it was, you know, a draft work plan. So that's important. It was also a look back to kind of how we're tracking this year. That's kind of important. We also heard from advisory body chairs and advisory bodies, because why not ask those volunteers in our community who are experts?
So advisory body chairs also attended?
Some of them did. Good. And some of them sent like their vice chair, and then some were unable to attend. But as advisory bodies, I think almost all of them, if not all of them, put together a short communique saying here's what we think you know, for our specific advisory body, where we think things should go. I mean, that's tremendously important. I wrapped a maritime analogy over the entire agenda, which is corny, but kind of my style.
Yeah.
and then at the end, we really, you know, there was a, last year we heard, we this first time we did kind of this interactive sticky note exercise. And if you're following from home, trying to watch the video and listen to the audio, it's terrible because you can't pick up 17 conversations happening at once on a wall with sticky notes and agreements and disagreements. But you could see a lot of activity.
So there was a lot. So you did the, this is where you put up the different things and people go multi-vote them. But there was dialogue during the voting.
Yeah.
And people would actually say, hey, what do you think of this?
And, yeah. And I think one of the exercises that I found most feedback from last year from council and staff, what we repeated, but we kind of expanded. We spent about an hour and a half, 2 hours, looking at core priorities that require a policy decision. So one of them, or multiple decisions, let's just pick housing. Housing requires multiple decisions at city council. It also requires a lot of staff work.
Well, there's a lot of different there's a lot of different solutions, and I don't mean competing solutions. No, I mean there's a lot of paths that we are proceeding down simultaneously.
Yeah. And this is one we mapped last year, and since then we've done things. The world's changed, the town's changed. I mean, we want to come back and do it again with what we know now. So we basically say, what are we trying? The exercise is pretty simple. What do we want to achieve? What are the outcomes? What does success look like? Let's all brainstorm what that looks like. And then we sorted our sticky notes. Then what is the policy decision to get those outcomes? So this is note to you, council members, this is your role. This is what you have to decide to get to the outcome. And then now let's work backwards from today and say, what work do we have to do to engage advisory bodies, to engage our community, to work with partners, to do research, you know, the whole host of things that need to happen along the way to get to that outcome. And we did that for housing, we did that for streets, and we did that for parks. And it was a lot of fun because, to your point, you saw, oh, there isn't just one decision, there isn't just one thing. There's a lot of integrated thinking over more than 1 year. This isn't just a 2024 plan, you know, that we'll need to do. For instance, updating the comprehensive plan. You know, that's done by mid-2025, June. Many steps.
Every 10 years?
I think it's every six, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. All right.
But I might have that wrong. But the point is, it's an important opportunity to line up our community's vision with a document that basically needs to encapsulate where we want to go, specifically with things like housing and development.
And this document is then used later on when we're trying to look at choices that we have to make to say, well, what is in our comprehensive? It's really the embodiment of our policy, right?
It is, and I think, you know, it's also, there's a consistency with the comprehensive plan that's important with a lot of the decisions along the way. So what we want to be is very specific and I'd say ambitious, especially with things like housing, with what we want in our comprehensive plan. So that, you know, that's a big decision in 25. That's not on the 2024 work plan as a decision, but it's part of the roadmap to get to the kind of Port Townsend that we're hearing from people more and more, we need to deal with our housing crisis. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was just a fun interactive exercise where, you know, shoulder to shoulder with decision makers, with department heads, people with different levels of, you know, awareness or tenure in Port Townsend, all trading ideas and kind of getting to a yes. It was a lot of fun.
You said something there frankly, it rankled me a little bit.
Oh, good.
And well, it was, you know, we're hearing more and more that, you know, people want us to do something about housing. Yeah. It's like, that actually really understates the situation. Yeah. We've all felt this for quite a while. I mean, you know, we've had forums and we've had.
Yeah,
I mean, we've been discussing this as long as you and I've been doing this.
So, look, I agree. I mean, maybe I said that kind of in a trite way. I mean, it wasn't meant to be. It was more, you know, that's an obvious unified, like, priority for our community.
It's clearly a priority for our community. Yeah. I would say that.
However, I mean, not to tilt too into to other topics, but, you know, I'm not surprised, but still disappointed that on one side, I hear a lot of it's a priority, and I agree, it is, you know. And in the same breath, or maybe after a quick pause, I'll also hear, but don't put it here. So there's a little bit of what do we really want? If we really want to go gangbusters on you know, not inappropriately scaled housing that's a mess, but if we really want to deal with the housing crisis and create affordability in Port Townsend, it requires change. And it's hard for everybody, even me.
Yep.
Change is challenging. So are we really on board? Because we don't want to do 2.5 years of work and get to a point where actually it was all for naught, because even though we state what we want, we don't really want it. So it's a little bit of truth telling here.
People say what they want, but they don't really think through what the implications of that are.
Or, like many decisions, and I hear this a lot recently, when we're about to make a decision, I hear a lot more about what's in it to lose from an individual than what's in it to gain from a community. And I think that's what, you know, that's the challenge of local government. We're the arbiters of the common good in a community with at least 10,000 opinions. And that's beautiful. That's democracy.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to it, a lot of the things I'm getting lately that are all kind of all caps and shouty are more like, this is what, you know, I don't want to lose this thing that I have. And not like, oh, I feel passionate about the future for my grandkids. I hear both. But I think it's easier to hear a community-minded, what's in it for everybody kind of story.
I think if I just look within myself at you know, what motivates me to get excited about something, it's often easier to get motivated by something bad that's going to happen to me rather than something that's more general that's out in the future that benefits us all.
Totally.
So I've had to really. You know, I've had to learn altruism and try not to just get my own, just get my back up.
I mean, I think here's something that rankles me, Taylor, if we're going to go rankle to rankle.
All right.
I would argue not altruism. I'd argue enlightened self-interest because I think what's, this is not true for everything, but you know, what's probably best for the community is probably
ultimately good
for most of us, you know, and there's some exceptions to that, you know, if you want to protect your own self-interest at all costs, you know, you can hog everything essentially, but you know, it's like Thomas Piketty, you know, if you take the economic argument, and I haven't read his whole big tome, but man, there's an argument with macroeconomics that actually the rich are better off if equality is greater. So if everyone comes into to means, it's good for everybody. And I think as a community, especially as we size up difficult decisions, and, you know, look, there's a tough decision at city council's feet on Monday. They're going to have to make a call after almost a year of engagement, heavy engagement around the golf course. They're going to have to make a call on what's best for the longest term for the most amount of people with public resources in the golf course. And more those who might have something to lose or have strong opinions, and bring your strong opinions. That's really important. And no matter what they are, come to council chambers on Monday.
We have been collecting those strong opinions for a year now.
We have quite a few, and council goes through every single one of them, bless them. But I guess maybe my plea is, if there's a way to think beyond your own nose, it's so much more valuable. You know, I actually had one person come up to me after the last open house, say, "This is what I want for me. For me, I want to keep it as it is," or whatever the example was. Mm-hmm. And here's why: because I get this. But what I'm representing up on the boards with my stickies and my comments and the survey and all that is not what's best for me. It's what I think is best for the community. And, you know, there's a parallel there, but I looked at this person and I said, thank you. That is the kind of mindset that actually leads to better decisions for everybody. And I think, you know, there's some compromises. There's some concessions that need to be made. But ultimately, if we're just battling at which interest group is going to win, then pretty much everybody else loses. And I believe that if we have a civil conversation about how we can all gain, we'll get better decisions.
Okay. Got a couple of comments in here.
Ooh, fun.
First one, I actually think there is some altruism in this. The question is, what about the North Beach outflow? He says he sees kids playing in it at low tide.
So yeah, great question. I love this one because well-meaning people have come up to me
again and again in
a kayak, actually, being like, "Hey, come over here," and they don't know that, you know, I work for the city. What's going on here? And so first off, can I assure you that when I know, I saw it this morning on my run, there is a pipe that connects Chinese Gardens to the beach. Has nothing to do with our sewer. Nothing to do with our wastewater treatment plant. It's kind of a tidal flow.
It's a tidal inflow and outflow. Yeah. Okay.
And that's been there for a while. And when at low tide, you will see the water bubbling up, looking like it's spilling something that might be nefarious into the ocean.
Effluent. So let's start. Our treatment plant is on the lagoon, but we don't dump into the lagoon.
That's true.
We dump into a pipe that goes way out.
It does. And that way out is beyond the low tide mark.
Okay.
It's actually quite a ways out. And it's legal, and we're the longest running city in Washington State with multiple years of awards for our wastewater quality and for our wastewater and compost plant. So we're literally number one in the state for this in terms of, you know, years of continuous achievement. So top marks to the wastewater team. They're awesome. But that flow is actually just coming in from the lagoon.
Oh.
And it has not. It's not treated water. It's not untreated water. It's not connected to the sewer.
I have to say, I did not know that. Yeah. I thought it was. I thought we had a problem with our sewer line.
Why would you not? I mean, so we do, but it doesn't manifest visibly on the beach. We have a problem with the sewer line in that the outflow is kind of crumbling. It's cracked. It's not in great condition. It's further out into the eelgrass beds.
Uh-huh.
And we did receive an ecology, State Department of Ecology loan for like $4 million to replace the whole thing. Uh-huh. We've had productive conversations with the Marine Resources Council and others who have helped us understand, is this the best way through? Because there's a lot of disruption if you have to build a whole new pipe, outflow pipe.
Right, over the eelgrass.
To the seal, you know, to the not just eelgrass, but a lot of organisms that live there. So we've taken just a little step back and working with ecology and some of our partners locally and said, let's reevaluate. For two reasons. One, we want good environmental outcomes. And two, just to be honest, $4 million is a lot of money. And if we don't have to spend that much there, we could save it or spend it elsewhere. So we're trying to make a little bit more of a calculated decision about that. Love the question. Whoever sent that in, thank you.
I learned something because I had heard that it bubbles up there, and I had just assumed
it's actually just coming in from Chinese gardens. It's just the water coming
and at high tide it flows into the Chinese gardens, and at low tide it flows back out of the Chinese gardens. But got another.
It makes common sense that you'd think it was a sewer treatment because it's right there.
We got another one here, and I might know the answer to this
to you, Taylor.
I'm wondering about the deer problem.
Oh.
And has it been put on the back burner? We've just doubled our deer population. With a whole new batch of, I might add, adorable baby deer.
Oh, I know.
and I believe there was a presentation at City Council by the state 6 months ago or so.
Yeah, you got it.
And they outlined a process that other cities have gone through to sort of look at this. Mm-hmm. And the city, because we can't just say this is what we're doing with the deer, we have to collect the data and build consensus and get agreement. So I know that presentation happened, and the city council, I believe, all went around and there was a thumbs up. This is something that we want to do.
Mm-hmm. So there's two, I think, hopefully consistent answers. One thing, basically, what we're doing and what we're not doing.
Okay.
I'll start with what we're doing. We're partnering with the state. So Fish and Wildlife is really responsible for the deer, and there's limited that the city can actually do unless we work with the state. So what we are doing is coming in, you know, that workshop session, I think it was December of last year, we had the expert, the premier expert out here, come into city council, give a workshop.
I waded through that tape.
Oh my gosh. Good for you. Yeah. I think Matthew Blankenship is his name. He's tremendous. So that's what we're doing. And we're also working with Matt on a number of code compliance issues because, I mean, let's just call it out like it is. People are feeding deer. It's a bad idea. And it's a bad idea for a number of reasons, because deer don't eat people food, but also because it habituates them to human contact, and it causes potentially aggressive deer and issues. So it's not legal to feed deer.
Please don't feed the deer.
Please don't feed the deer. It makes it worse, even though it's their key. Some people think they're cute.
They are cute.
Interesting. I mean, absolutely. But don't do that. It's not legal, and it's a bad idea. And so we're actually actively working a number of code compliance issues of people who are unfortunately making the problem worse by feeding the deer. Mm-hmm. That's one way we're directly involved with Fish and Wildlife. And it's
on the other hand, the problem isn't just that problem.
I agree. But that's
it's not their fault.
If you had to triage the things that are most egregious and most important,
making
the problem worse and stopping the bleeding is where we're focusing our efforts. So our planning team is very involved in making sure that in legal team, because this gets legal, involved in stopping that problem from getting worse. What we're not doing is prioritizing deer to the top of the pile right now. And so I will admit, and I will say straightly to the community who expect progress on deer and policy progress or a major culling campaign or a relocation or whatever, people have lots of ideas.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah, it hasn't risen to the top of things like streets and parks and housing. For kind of a couple reasons. One is, I would argue it's not as dire. Now, if you feel threatened by a deer or if you've had problems, it does feel pretty dire.
There were a series of public comments at that session with people who did feel exactly that, threatened by deer.
So I understand.
I've had a nose to nose with a guy with horns.
Antlers.
Antlers. I'd like to get in my car, please.
So I think that's one reason. I think the other is it does draw us away from those other critical priorities. We're pretty light on the ground, you know? And so even just the code compliance issue with planning is taking up a lot of time. And, ideally we wouldn't have that issue, so we could focus on, okay, as a community, how do we work through this problem?
So is this something which is sort of on the horizon that we're going to be looking at
it's in our draft work plan again. And it really, I mean, honestly, here's sizing up those two answers together and saying, if we have a diminished amount of code compliance issues we have to wade through, basically, if people stop feeding the deer, it'll help us have more staff capacity to deal with this more of a structural issue of what to do about deer.
All right.
So it's definitely on our radar. I appreciate the question. It's painful to have to say no, not right now to things, but everything we do that's outside of core priorities like housing, infrastructure, transportation. I mean, it literally takes us away from that.
Okay, thank you for that answer. We have just a couple minutes left, and you teased something just before we started about transportation.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I think that was on your list of things to talk about today, and I don't know much about that.
Yeah, well, this is something that's come up a number of times over the last year, or actually, who am I kidding? For at least decades, we've been talking about how, let's see, what's the right word? I could use poop. Think of the most FCC compliant, word, borderline cuss word, and that's the state of our streets. Totally get it. They're not in great shape. Some of them are in pretty good shape. Most of them aren't.
Right.
And we have, 81.
And there's strong community feedback that that the city needs to.
Dear Port Townsend, we hear you. In fact, dear editorial in the Leader yesterday, we hear you.
Yeah.
I mean, it was literally the editorial from the PT Leader saying, do something about the streets.
Okay.
So we've also been talking about this in Infrastructure and Development, City Council Committee. We've also have this in our video about transportation that, if we keep doing what we're doing, we're going to lose ground. And I think we've also, teased, I guess, like the word you used, some of the ways we can fix the problem or at least get a handle on it.
Mm-hmm.
And in that video we have these lovely four videos that are under 5 minutes. Go watch them. The transportation
one. Point taken, Josh.
Yeah, in the transportation one, there's a mention of a funding tool called a transportation benefit district.
Uh-huh.
I was on the phone with or a Zoom call with the city managers of Bainbridge, Squim, Port Angeles yesterday. And I forget about Port Angeles, but I know for a fact Squim and Bainbridge use this tool to invest in streets. We don't. So one of the things we could do is form what's called a transportation benefit district, which is the borders of the city.
Uh-huh.
And it allows sales and use tax authority to pay for streets. And so there's a dual, many opportunities, but I'll give the two big ones. One is council, if they form a TBD, which I'm told through the retreat, it was hammered home, that's an interest. So we're going to work toward that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you might even be interested in a special meeting coming up later this month that we're teeing up to talk about this. We want to ask the community, should we form this, this tool? And there'll be a special meeting on the 24th of July to talk about whether we should do this or not. If that tool is formed, council can make a decision to levy 0.1% sales tax to transportation benefit district on their own.
What kind of money does that generate?
About $275,000. Not a ton.
Not a lot.
And I get the point. We're at 9.1% sales tax, and no one wants a new tax, including me. But if we want to fix our streets, that's probably one of the most viable tools. The other, which I really appreciate because it's really a community vote, the other is to get it on the ballot and say, look, if you want to levy an additional 0.2%, you got to ask the voters. And if the voters say yes, then you could do that. And that generates, that 1/10 plus another 2/10 is 3/10. It's about $750,000 a year. And as stated in the video that the city produced, that'll allow us over multiple years. I'll be honest. It'll take 20, 30 years, but we'll claw back all the streets to some degree of better repair. And what I love about this is that it's a great tool. Other cities use it on the peninsula. And going big with it requires a vote of the people. So I would say, if you care about this, pay attention, come to the city council meeting on the 24th and track this and learn more at our website. It's cityofpt.us. It's the comprehensive streets page. There's going to be more there very soon.
Transportation
benefit district.
District.
Yeah.
TBD.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There you go. We want to hear from you.
Yeah.
I expect like with housing, like we want housing, it's a crisis. And then, hey, hold on, not right here. I mean, I expect people, it's easy to say, I want the streets to be better. I mean, everybody does. When people are presented with, well, do you want to invest in streets to make them better? It's a different question. It's a little harder to say,
it is a harder question.
Do you want to do this? Cause it costs something. And that's really the proposition that I think, we're planning for.
Okay. Well, John, once again, it has gone too quickly, and I have overrun my stop time.
Oh, sorry, everybody.
But
what's the song, Taylor? What's the song?
Well, the show is going to feature several versions of this song, which I and there's no message here. I just kind of got to kind of humming it, and then I thought, well, do I have, you know, who do I have doing this song? So we're going to hear, we're starting out with Muddy Waters from Newport Jazz Festival in 1960. Mm. Baby, Please Don't Go.
Nice.
Baby, Please Don't Go. Here we go. So, John, you have to go, but...
Tune in next week. The mayor, planning director, and our consultant on Evans Vista will be joining us.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, John.
You bet.